Hello and welcome to the fourth in a series of podcasts featuring two University registrars talking about higher ed stuff. Dave Hall of the University of Leicester and Paul Greatrix of the University of Nottingham talked through a number of items of registrarial interest, with the focus this time very much on teaching and learning. The big issues addressed include, are we doing the right things in the classroom and how do we know? What is higher education actually for? Is it all about getting a great job, or more to do with living a good life and being a good citizen? And shouldn't senior managers be focusing on all of this just a bit more than they currently do? There's lots of discussion too on curricula, community and inclusivity, and the extent to which social class is still a vital issue in higher education. There are also meanderings through the corridors of the School of Life, some mention of the rankings, and then the place of academic discourse in public life. A packed agenda for everyone to enjoy.
Welcome. We are a couple of registrars. My name is Paul Greatrix. I'm registrar at the University of Nottingham. With me is Dave Hall, who's registrar and chief operating officer at the University of Leicester. And we're talking all things to do with higher education one way or the other. Today we're going to talk a wee bit about what one of the core things that universities do, which is teaching or enabling student learning, whichever way you like to look at it. And I suppose the question for us is, are we really focusing on the right things for our students and indeed for society? Because we spend an awful lot of university resource on teaching. It takes up an awful lot of academic staff time, preparing curricula, delivering teaching, undertaking assessment, and doing that over an extended period of time, and developing new ideas, new topics, and then new ways of delivering them. So you'd hope it was all worthwhile. We've got different ways of testing the value of what we're doing, part of which is about, are our students happy? Well, that's one indicator, or satisfied, as the survey tells us. Do they get good jobs? Do they lead satisfying lives after graduating? What do our alumni tell us? We've got different ways of gauging this. Is society generally happy with what we're doing? Well, if you'd read the press of late, you'd think that generally they're pretty unhappy with most of what universities are doing. But that could be just because it's our turn to get a kicking from the media. Who knows? Or they've just had enough of experts. But I suppose the fundamental question then, Dave, is our universities in their teaching dimension, rather than their research role, actually doing the right thing for our students and for the country?
No.
Right, well, that's pretty decisive. So do you want to unpack that just a little?
I think that it's a question that should never leave the senior management team's meetings. It should always be a present concern for a university, is are we doing the right things? What are we here to do? And there's the historical perspective of our universities there to produce the leaders of society, the learned gentleman, the Newman sort of idea of somebody who can go out and run the empire and get this broad liberal education which will allow them to converse with a network of like-minded colleagues, a bit like the disgrace of the public school system that we've got in the country at the minute. There's that view, or is a very utilitarian view, that you go to university, you get some skills, you get a job, that helps the economy, you improve the economic production, and then etc. Improve the wealth of society. And there is a dimension in the middle that is actually the most important to any of us.
Yeah.
And that is, how do you live a good life? And when do you have the space and time to be given the tools to reflect on that issue? And I can take it into the area of student mental health, for example.
Yeah.
We're not here to fix mental health issues that students or anybody else faces, but we are absolutely have a responsibility to give them the tools to deal with the challenges that they will come across throughout their lives. And it's giving them, anybody that comes through our organisations, the tools and the skills and the knowledge to find sources of advice, to provide them with philosophical underpinnings as well that will enable them to tackle the big challenges in life which are not work related normally or discipline related, they're normally relationship related. Yeah. They're about the death of a partner or a breakup of a relationship. Those sort of things which are much more impactful on our everyday lives, to deal with the challenge of insecurity or racism or sexism, the things that encroach on our daily experiences, the prejudices that we hold, the values that we have or don't have, our intolerance of others, our intolerance of difference, all that is what underpins where we can tackle them, a safer and happier society.
So that's quite an ambitious prospectus, right? And, you know, I find it hard to disagree with any of it. But, I mean, I would say that, you know, it is kind of close to the kind of liberal tradition of higher education, albeit not at the elite educating the masters kind of end of it, very much about the educating better citizens end of it and enabling people to make the most of the opportunities that society presents to them and to lead that rich and fulfilling life. And I mean, certainly, you know, my own personal experience is that, you know, actually not realizing fully the benefits of, you know, the experience I had until much later. And, you know, that's, I think, commonplace. But the and there are many interesting things about what you said, but one of the first things you said was that, you know, this should kind of be top of the agenda for every kind of management team meeting in a university. I have to say, I'm not certain it is from what I've seen. I mean, you may get, you know, elements of it regularly, but I mean, it's a pretty profound question. You know, are we doing the right thing for our students? And I'm not certain everyone is engaging with that all the time, are they?
No, because it's a difficult question to tackle, certainly in the length of an average management team meeting, which has got a lot of very practical and operational, yeah, and in the short term very serious issues to deal with normally. But the purpose of the argument of what is the university there for is critical to the way the sector is perceived nationally, mm, as well, and society's willingness to make a contribution towards the investment necessary into the system.
Okay, so but we're in a territory now where there is very much a narrative about clamping down on these, you know, what have often been called Mickey Mouse degrees, or those which deliver the lowest perceived value, and that is a very utilitarian view of the value of a degree course. So we can expect an assault on the academy in terms of the, you know, certain courses that are offered, and an attempt to identify which they are, be that through some kind of subject level teaching excellence framework or some other tool. Right, crude estimates of earning power, or whatever it might be. So, I suppose rather than senior management time devoted to this, shouldn't you know, every academic who's responsible for a course be consistently asking themselves, "Am I doing the right thing here?"
I think there's that would be a challenge for a lot of colleagues.
Yeah,
some would quite rightly say that's beyond my expertise. Mm. In a sense, it isn't, because they'll have had more life experience than the majority of our students,
yeah,
anyway, who are going to be a younger generation. I think it's a management issue, because it's how you develop the curriculum and the range of skills that you need from the staff base in order to deliver that curriculum. And my question is whether the curriculum should or can always just be very narrow from a disciplinary perspective or narrow from a utility perspective, and it's our responsibility to ensure that the university education is broader than chemistry or whatever.
Yeah.
And a question you could, the way we're being measured, as you say, is very utilitarian. Have students got a well-paid job, which is I can't think of a worse measure when you were thinking about a successful, happy, secure, tolerant society.
Yeah.
That what you say that you you treasure or that you want to reward is white people getting jobs in the accountancy in London.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's how you do it.
Yeah.
If you want to have a successful university, you recruit white students from well-educated backgrounds, you churn them into white-dominated professions, and you make sure they work in the southeast of England. That is what the government is saying is a successful university,
yeah.
And
yeah.
It is a total outrage that we are putting up with this nonsense. I would argue, why don't we measure whether students come out of our organisations more passionate, compassionate and tolerant than when they came in?
That is quite a difficult thing to measure. You do it presumably by, you know, testing how they react when you give them some kittens or something. I mean, how would you actually do that? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm struggling to see how
if you start with the aspiration, that universities or the education system or public services more generally are there to help underpin and enable and that securing of a happier and secure environment for the citizens, then if you start from that basis rather than the presumption that it is about high paid employment which delivers that, because it will not deliver it for everybody, and it isn't necessary to have all that, that is not an end in itself. You start with the assumption that you're going to say that our education is going to make you a more compassionate and tolerant human being.
But what do you do with those students then who, you know, don't give a stuff about being compassionate, right? Who actually, they want to do a degree because they want to get a good job and they want to earn a lot of money.
It's not in the sales literature. Yeah, I'm not selling the idea of an education. I'm in terms of saying that in a prospectus it would say this course will make you more compassionate, because I think you're right, a lot of people would be not understand what we were getting at, or would turn you off. But you would come into your education to be educated, and that is part of an education. If we're saying we are teaching you to become a chemist, well, if we're just teaching you to become a chemist, why do we have any interest in your mental health?
So aren't you articulating very much the kind of A.C. Grayling New College of the Humanities kind of view of the world? Isn't that the model that you're proposing?
Well, with the exception that it would have to be a diverse and inclusive organisation that was based outside of London for starters. So apart from that, I don't know how elitist it is, but you certainly get that.
It's quite small, I think it's small and quite expensive.
But a model I think is interesting. It's a bit orientated towards a particular type of person, but if you look at the School of Life, what they've been trying to do.
Sorry, I'm already in British sitcom territory. You know, I'm at the School of Life next door to the School of Hard Knocks. Just down the street.
The School of Life is something been set up by Alain de Botton, who's a philosopher.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
okay.
they produce a lot of podcasts, and the philosopher Mark Vernon writes for them and others, and it is very much focused on how do you deal with the day-to-day challenges of life.
Yeah.
And it seems to me a lot of what they're trying to do is exactly what universities do. How do we validate the knowledge that sits on the self-help shelves in bookshops?
Yeah.
And people want that. Yeah, it's a massive...
But most of it's guff, isn't it?
Exactly, most of it's guff, exactly. So where's the education sector in that? And I think it has a role in it, and it's necessarily ignored because we're being driven to be a bunch of racist, elitist institutions.
Yeah.
And working hard not to be that, but that is the dynamics of league tables, the dynamics of the measures.
I mean, no, I think you're absolutely right in terms of the pressures at league tables, you know, pose for institutions is pushing you down a particular metrics route where, you know, it is the employment destinations, it's the A-levels that people come in with, it's a degree classifications, staff-student ratios, that's it, you know, and then you're home and dry in terms of the domestic table.
It's the same with, if you were to introduce, it's like introducing league tables to hospitals, and the league tables are based on how many patients, their short time in, and they come out healthier than they went in. Well, if you were a hospital, then you wouldn't deal with anybody with cancer or acute illnesses. And that. You know, it would completely distort the health system. And that's what I would be worried about is happening in Irish.
I know, I'm sure there's plenty of evidence to support that. Going back to then to the impact on the curriculum. I mean, it isn't. I mean, leaving aside the fact that some particularly those where there's professional body accreditation, some curricula are pretty tightly constrained and have very little scope for additionality. And you know, people like to fill up the gaps with their pet subjects anyway. But isn't there an argument that for most degrees you should be, and you know, to go back to your earlier point, you know, everyone should be doing, you know, kind of philosophy 101.
It should be integrated into the educational experience. Yeah. I know this is it may come across as idealistic, but it's what's the purpose of the university? And in terms of is a space in the curriculum, how many hours a week are a lot of students studying? How many hours a week are we actually teaching? I mean, but you know, if you compacted it down, it's not many weeks in a year. There's plenty of time if we wanted to do it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So do you think there's you know, any kind of appetite for that? Because lots of universities like Nottingham, and I'm sure like Leicester, we have additional modules that students can do where they can you know, gain additional credits for doing things, some of which are work-related, some of which are about personal development, and, you know, that supplements their experience, makes them a more rounded, arguably a more employable individual, but nevertheless gives them a bit more from their university experience. But they're all kind of optional, right? Do you think there is going to be any appetite in any... Are there any examples of any universities that have actually gone down this road?
Has Hull introduced a more broader curriculum? I thought somebody like...
Oh, right, okay. I mean, I know, you know, there was a much vaunted Melbourne model in Australia, of course, which was meant to be broader based. And of course, the tradition of Scottish universities, you know, having a 4-year undergraduate degree, it was originally a kind of general, you know, a general degree, which was meant to incorporate different elements of arts and sciences. But, you know, there's been a relentless specialisation over time. But part of the Melbourne model, I thought, was to have those more broad-based degrees. And, of course, you know, the US tradition is very much, you know, to have broader degrees and require everyone to do things outside their core discipline.
Maybe it's as much about... Well, there's a kind of commercial imperative in institutions to want students to come back after they graduated, you know, to do their master's degrees or whatever, or come back and do CPD or what have you, or come back and you know, help develop curriculum or donate or whatever it might be. But there's also similar elements of how you are turned to validated knowledge in order to manage the experiences of life more constructively, is that you look back to your university for it, that you know that there is that the knowledge there is as validated as it can be. It's not about going into a bookshop and chancing your luck with the musing of a celebrity, but actually that there is a long philosophical tradition that can back up particular attitudes. There is religious traditions that can support behaviours and values and approaches to life. There's a rich, massive, seam of information which can be distilled for people throughout their lives. And that's, I think, I should ask the School of Life for some money for saying this, but I think they're that's what they're trying to do. I mean, it smacks a bit. It's a bit middle class and a bit, you know, London centric.
I was going to say everything you've already railed against.
Yeah, exactly. We're just railed against. So, but I got sympathy with what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And, you know, I'm sure their Office for Student Registration is proceeding apace. But, I mean, I do think, you know, go back to your liberal idealism. I mean, part of the thing that I like, although it's harder in a maths system, right, but there is still, in parts of the system, I think the kind of campus experience, the being part of a community for students, is actually hugely valuable, even if it's only for part of their time at university. And that notion that you are, you know, in an academic community where you have to, you know, play by the rules, but you also learn what it is to be in a community, and you learn to, you know, to get on with people who you don't have anything in common with, and you learn to engage with them, and you learn about what it means to engage in a, you know, rational academic debate with people. And it, one of the things that's always seemed to me is that in terms of the, you know, the systems that, you know, traditional campus universities like this one have, there is still a massive disconnect between the lived experience of students outside the classroom and what goes on in it. And there's much more space for integration of those two things, so that halls of residence, places where students go, are actually also, you know, the fulcrums of debate and discussion and dialogue of the kind you were describing, as well as the classroom. And I think universities miss a massive trick by not getting involved in that kind of thing more.
I think that's true. We run out at Halls of Residence an arts programme, for example, and students can engage in music making together, the whole series of things they can do. And that was just entirely initiated by the resident staff.
Yeah.
There's an academic component in that sense too. It's not accredited or anything, but it's giving students an opportunity to experience or fulfil a wider range of ambitions.
I mean, and in similar vein, we over a few years, although we haven't done it for a couple of years now, was provide all new students on campus with a copy of a book.
Oh yeah.
So you know, we've done various, but Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Great Gatsby, etc., Brave New World, to give them something to talk about, so that everyone has a common reference point, because everyone's coming from all over the world, all different backgrounds. But if they've got a book, they can at least say, "What do you think of the book? Did you read X? You know, what did you think of this character, that character?" So it's something that's a common reference point.
I think it was a great initiative, and we copied it.
Yeah. Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Oh well.
It was the Good Immigrant, I think.
Right. No, which I mean, I still love the idea. It's just that it's quite expensive.
It is expensive.
We're pursuing other avenues at the moment. But if anyone does want to donate, you know, 8,000 copies of a particular text, you know, it makes you jump up the bestseller charts. So, are there any other aspects of that kind of curricular experience that you think can, help to make students ultimately better citizens? Because if they are better citizens, then they will make better decisions in life, and our country will ultimately become a better place, won't it?
Well, if you look back, so the financial crisis, I'd argue Brexit, the challenges of the lack of respect for political life, if you like, for politicians and that. Where were the universities in all this? What were we? We are part of civil society. We are educating now upwards of 50% of the age group, the 18 to 20, 21 year olds. And through all that, I think some of those things that I've mentioned are examples of the failure of universities.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with it. Don't disagree.
Productivity. Massive problem in this country. And it's a failure problem of universities, and as we got saying earlier, and I think it's the continuing challenge of having still a very class-based society.
Yeah.
Although, quite rightly, the issues of identity are now more to the forefront around gender and race in particular, but a whole range of identity issues, sexuality and what have you. But fundamentally, class is the problem, or is a problem, because we are perpetuating a society in which a small group of people run the institutions of the country.
Yep.
They're educated in the same few schools, and they determine the atmosphere and the culture in which the rest of us live. And the universities some universities are a party to that elitism, and it has done this country no good over decades.
Mm. Yeah, they produce good research, but they also do other things as well. No, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. And I think the anti-expert narrative as well hasn't helped, because the same people who are who are, you know, running the system are also the one critiquing, you know, the academic experts and saying they don't want anything to do with them. Much better to have amateurs who can bluster their way through things than to actually have people who know what they're talking about. And I fear, you know, we're not far off the days when the only academic input into, you know, British public discourse will be through the question of the day on the Today programme, where
they
wheel an academic in to, you know, to do a, you know, a quiz question. You know, in an open universe,
but they won't. If when it comes, it's interesting, as you say, in the media, when it comes to they talk about human interest in stories and that. When it comes to that, they are more likely to turn to a celebrity than you would be to an academic who has got access to a richer seam of material in order to describe or articulate and understand and analyse an issue.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. So we have had a good cant around the curricular challenges facing universities and their ability to, you know, educate the future citizens of the country. We've solved absolutely none of it, but it's been very entertaining talking about it. So thank you again, Dave, for taking the time to talk about it. And we'll hear from you anon in due course. So thank you very much indeed. That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course, and if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education, comment and fun and games. Until the next time.